From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief Radio. I'm your host, Reverend Welton Gaddy. We're broadcasting from the Center for American Progress studios in Washington, D.C. Tea party, tea party, tea party. I feel like Paul Revere alerting everyone to who was coming. There have been a lot of attempts on the part of progressives to dismiss the legitimacy of the whole Tea Party movement. It's been called AstroTurf, meaning a fake grassroots movement secretly funded by wealthy conservatives. But this week, the highly respected Public Religion Research Institute released its third American Values Survey, this one titled The Tea Party, The Religious Right, and the American Religious Landscape.
We found that the Tea Party movement, it makes up about a significant number. Now, 1 in 10 Americans would say they consider themselves part of the Tea Party movement. So that's not insignificant.
And it reveals much that is contrary to conventional wisdom. Public Religion Research Institute founder and CEO Dr. Robert Jones designed the study, and he's here in the studio with us to talk about his findings and help us draw some conclusions.
I understand what the Muslims want to do in America.
Ah, you know that voice? That's Reverend Franklin Graham, son of the late preacher to the president's Reverend Billy Graham. We talk a lot on State of Belief Radio about politicians using fear to motivate voters. But what do you think about religious leaders stoking that fear? I know what I think, and I'm going to tell you what I think just a little later in the show.
Jesus said, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I'll give you rest." And I said, that's the doctrine of Metropolitan Community Church. I want to tell you something, my brothers and sisters. There's just one God. One God that black, white, Chicano, straight or gay can serve and know that he cares.
A year before, the 1969 Stonewall riot in New York City served as a catalyst for the modern gay rights movement. A former Pentecostal minister named Troy Perry invited anyone who wanted to worship in a gay-affirming setting to gather at his home in suburban Los Angeles. October 6th marked the 42nd anniversary of that founding date of the Metropolitan Community Church. With nearly 300 congregations worldwide, it's the largest lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered organization in the world. And founder Reverend Troy Perry is joining us on this edition of State of Belief Radio. But first, on the studio line is Sarah Posner, a friend of the show, a friend of mine, associate editor of Religion Dispatches, where she covers politics for the site. Sarah is the author of God's Prophets, P-R-O-F-I-T-S, subtitled Faith, Fraud, and the Republican Crusade for Values Voters. I'm delighted to have Sarah Posner back with us today. Sarah, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Listen, I know that you were in attendance at the presentation of the Public Religion Research Institute's American Values Survey over at Brookings this past week.
Mm-hmm.
And you've written a compelling article about it on Religion Dispatches. Dr. Robbie Jones actually is going to be joining us later in the show, and I don't want to steal his thunder, but from your point of view, does that study about the Tea Party and the religious right and what's going on in politics, does it add to the worries of political candidates who don't have a religion angle in their campaigns?
I don't think so. I mean, I think from the standpoint of Democrats, at least, for a couple of reasons. Now, one is that together the Tea Party movement and the religious right don't comprise the majority of voters.
Mm-hmm.
But let me just put a cautionary note on that. They do comprise a very motivated and enthusiastic group of voters who will be enthusiastic to get their friends to go out to
mm-hmm.
vote.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that for Democrats, trying to appeal to those voters by talking about their Christian values or giving a nod to going to church or anything like that will help them with those voters, because those voters clearly don't care. I mean, you know, when you look at the polls of the number of conservatives who don't think that Obama is a Christian or think he's a Muslim mm-hmm. or don't know what his religion is or don't think he's legitimately a Christian, it's clear that no amount of religious pandering will change these voters' minds.
Yeah. Okay, so how much is the Tea Party agenda, religious and otherwise, affecting the politics in this election cycle?
Well, I think the Republican Party thinks that now they have to satisfy Tea Partiers. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, and in previous elections, we saw the Republican Party thinking that they had to satisfy the religious right. You know, they had to be anti-choice, although in this election cycle, I think we're seeing more extreme anti-choice candidates like Sharon Angle and Ken Buck in Colorado who oppose legal abortion, even in the case of rape or incest, and in Angle's case, in when the health of the mother is at risk.
Mm-hmm.
Because Tea Party is sort of the flavor of the moment, Republicans are very much trying to cater to them. But in a lot of ways, it's not very different from the way that they've catered to the religious right. Mm-hmm. They know that it's a voting bloc that's not a majority, but it's a significant part of their base. And it's a significant part of their base that's motivated to engage in get-out-the-vote efforts.
And on the other side, if I understand you correctly, the Democrats might as well just not worry about it because there's no way for them to get that vote anyway.
Right. But I do think that the Democrats need to somehow motivate their base. Otherwise, they're going to get creamed. And one of those things is, you know, while not necessarily articulating a religious vision for the country, but articulating a vision that lays out what they believe the country is about and what they will do to accomplish that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Tea Partiers, agree with what they say or not, they clearly have a vision.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the Democrats need to lay out a vision that would describe exactly what government does for you and why government is good.
I'm in full agreement with you on that. If it happens, as a lot of people are saying it could, and we get a Republican majority in Congress, what would that do to impact issues that are important to those of us committed to religious freedom?
In the House, if the Republicans take over, I think that you're going to see the dominance of people like Mike Pence, who's thought to be considering a run for president and is very much at the forefront of both the Tea Party and the religious right. And this idea that, you know, America is a Christian nation and we're founded on Judeo-Christian principles and that certain things like rights for gay and lesbian people intrude on religious freedom for Christians. And I think that they're going to be very much motivated on religious issues or issues that deal with religion in some way to be motivated by that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would see people like Pence and Michelle Bachmann very much motivated by the idea that they're fighting some sort of battle for Christian dominance.
Yeah. Last week, you wrote a really interesting piece about Dan Webster. He's being called Taliban Dan. Florida Democratic Congressman Alan Grayson's political ad does that.
Mm-hmm.
And you explore how the outrage at Grayson's hyperbole actually has diverted media attention from the theocratic themes of Webster's past statements. As I've told you before, you come at stories with a slant and an insight that most people don't have. Tell us a little bit more about that, because I think you're on to something extremely important.
In the ad, he called him Taliban Dan, and he played a very small clip over and over again from a speech that Webster had given last year in 2009 to the Institute in Basic Life Principles, which is an evangelical organization that has had great influence on the homeschooling movement, on the Christian right. Because the ad was such a sledgehammer and because it just took this one little sentence and repeated it out of context, it gave Webster two openings. One was to protest that, you know, he's nothing like the Taliban, and that was ridiculous to compare him to the Taliban, but also that wasn't what he said. So he goes on TV and he says, well, I was telling these men that they shouldn't pray on that verse. Their wives should pray on that verse. And so I wasn't telling her what to do. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you might look at it that way, but the reality is that he was speaking to this group that supports that very theology of wifely submission to husbands, which mm-hmm. is actually more complex than Grayson made it out to be. Mm-hmm. But that got completely lost because factcheck.org and PolitiFact on NPR talked about how Grayson's ad was false, mm-hmm. that it falsely portrayed what Webster was saying. And that's not really true either. But the idea that we have a political candidate running for office who's close with this very extremely theocratic, autocratic, authoritarian organization, we're not talking about that. We're only talking about how Alan Grayson stepped over the line.
I don't think it's unfair to say that the theology that you're talking about is a theology that is very dangerous to democracy. What are we missing from your point of view? Are those of us covering the intersection of religion and politics missing some things that you need to tell us to wake up about?
Just drilling down a little bit deeper into what it means that the religious right and the Tea Party are coalescing together on political issues. Mm-hmm. When a lot of people look at that, they just look at the question of, oh, are the Tea Parties talking about the wedge social issues like abortion and gay marriage? Oh, they're not, so therefore they must not be interested in these social issues or the agenda of the religious right. Mm-hmm. And I think that the religious right and a big segment of the Tea Party movement share something more fundamental, and that is the idea that our government has been given to us by God, and that we're, you know, endowed by the Creator, and that's what inspired the Constitution, that the Constitution wasn't actually written by men but inspired by God, and that the federal government has exceeded the God-granted authority they think it has, and therefore the federal government should be challenged. And I think that without understanding that as being at the heart of the intersection between the religious right and the Tea Party, I think we're missing what's possibly most dangerous about this alliance.
My guest has been Sarah Posner, Associate Editor of Religion Dispatches, author of God's Prophets, Faith, Fraud, and the Republican Crusade for Values Voters. Sarah, as always, it is great to talk with you. It's insightful to talk with you. Thanks for taking time to be with us.
My pleasure, Welton.
I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief Radio. Still ahead on this week's show, a closer look at what Reverend Franklin Graham thinks you should be afraid of. And the founder of the Metropolitan Community Church, Reverend Troy Perry, joins us to celebrate the 42nd anniversary of this inclusive global ministry. But up next, Dr. Robert Jones on the surprising results of the Public Religion Research Institute's latest American Values Survey. You'll want to hear this. That means you'll want to stay tuned. We'll be right back on State of Belief Radio. Welcome back, everybody, to State of Belief. I'm Welton Gaddy. This week, the Public Religion Research Institute released its third American Values Survey. These people do great work. The survey is a comprehensive look at some of the broad changes in the political landscape and a detailed analysis of the similarities and differences between self-identified religious conservatives and Tea Party supporters. To highlight some of the key discoveries of this project and discuss the potential impact of its findings on the 2010 elections, I'm delighted to welcome back to the studio Dr. Robbie Jones, who is the founder and CEO of the Public Religion Research Institute, and he is the designer of the Values Survey. Robbie, welcome back to State of Belief.
Oh, very happy to be back.
Is the Tea Party just the Christian right under a new name? And if it's not that, how big is the overlap between those two?
Yeah, it's not just the Christian right under a new name. There is certainly some unique things about the Tea Party. And our survey found, both some things that confirmed some conventional wisdom about Americans who identify with the Tea Party movement. But I think it actually challenged more than it confirmed. Among some of the things that it confirmed, Americans who identify with the Tea Party are overwhelmingly white. They tend to be more male than the general population. They tend to be concentrated a little more highly in the South. 6 in 10, those who identify with the Tea Party, say that Fox News is the most trustworthy source. And they also have, you know, their favorite candidate, Sarah Palin. Clearly shows up in the data. 8 in 10 have favorable views of Sarah Palin, and they have highly negative views of President Barack Obama, 75% unfavorable. We found a surprising overlap between Americans who say they're part of the Tea Party movement and Americans who say they're part of the Christian conservative movement. In fact, nearly half of Americans who say they're part of the Tea Party movement, 47%, also say they're a part of the Christian conservative movement. So that's a fairly remarkable overlap in membership.
Robbie, did I don't know how to get at this. There have been some people who've just said the Tea Party doesn't care anything about religion. It's just about government, civil rights.
Right.
What does your survey tell you about
that? Well, I would say there's a pretty big gap between those claims at the elite level and the rank and file who actually make up the Tea Party. Members of the Tea Party are highly religious. I mean, they're much more religious than the general population. For example, they attend religious services at much higher levels than the general population. And as you know, that's saying a lot because the American public is a pretty religious public. So they also are more likely to have literal views of the Bible than the general population. And they're more likely also to say religion is the most important thing in their life than the general population.
The Christian right people that align with the Tea Party are not likely to have many arguments with them?
Well, they will have some, but it's mostly a matter of degree rather than a matter of kind. But, you know, if you go to views like, for example, the issues of abortion rights or the issues of same-sex marriage, and this was one of the surprising things that, you know, the conventional wisdom is held that the Tea Party members are made up of mostly of libertarians, right, which would tend to want to maximize individual liberty in all areas of life, including across these social issues. But what we found from the survey among rank-and-file Americans who consider themselves part of the Tea Party movement, on social issues like abortion, same-sex marriage, they're really not libertarians. They're social conservatives. More than two-thirds say that abortion should be illegal in all or most cases, and less than 1 in 5 support allowing gay and lesbian couples to marry. So that's not certainly not the profile of a libertarian view on social issues.
Well, goodness, time's flying by. It's time to take another break. But we'll be talking more with Dr. Jones when we come back. Stay tuned. This is State of Belief Radio, brought to you by Interfaith Alliance. Welcome back, everyone. This is State of Belief Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy. We're talking with Dr. Robert Jones, the founder and CEO of the Public Religion Research Institute. He designed the Third American Values Survey titled The Tea Party, The Religious Right, and the American Religious Landscape. When Republicans look at what you did, what do they feel? And when Democrats look at it, what do you think they feel?
I think that there's a little bit of a surprise at the overlap between these two groups. And in particular, I think between the size of these two groups. We found only 1 in 10 Americans identify with the Tea Party movement. 22% of Americans identify with the Christian conservative movement. So one implication there, because of the relative size of these groups, is that really the Christian conservative movement is much more likely to influence the agenda of the Tea Party movement than vice versa. There is a group of energized people on the right side of politics, and I can't see on the left side of politics a group that's as energized and mobilized as that group.
You did a values voter survey back in 2006.
Right.
What changes have you seen
on social issues? There's some really interesting trends. In 06, we really had, you know, the so-called values voters sort of thing was everywhere. And in that context, the issue of abortion and the issue of same-sex marriage were mentioned in the same breath almost every time. And what we have seen since then is really a decoupling of those issues. So attitudes on abortion rights have stayed fairly flat across this time. They haven't really moved that much. And we also asked people in the survey how their views had shifted over the last 5 years to see if what they reported matched, you know, what had actually happened. And lo and behold, on abortion, 85% of the country says my view has not changed at all in the last 5 years. On the issue of same-sex marriage or rights for gays and lesbians, it's a much different picture. There's much more movement. So 75% still say their views haven't changed over this relatively short period of time. But among the quarter that have, 3-1 say their views have shifted in a more supportive direction for rights and gays and lesbians. And we actually saw that in the data, too. One of the more interesting things in the data is a big uptick in support for same-sex marriage between – and interestingly enough, the uptick only occurred between 2008 and 2010. It was fairly flat between 2006 and 2008. It's an 8-point jump. We have a 3-part question that asks people about same-sex marriage, support for civil unions, or no legal recognition. For the first time, we have a plurality of people saying that they support same-sex marriage that's surpassing the number of people who say they don't support so they support no legal recognition.
What surprised you when you were going through the data? What surprised you most?
Yeah. We were counting on finding some overlapping values between the Christian conservative movement and the Tea Party movement. What I think we were not so much counting on is overlapping membership. We were really quite surprised to find that nearly half of those in the Tea Party movement also identified as Christian conservatives. So I think that's the big surprise of the survey.
Is government driving religion or is religion driving government? And the reason I ask that is because I'm curious what you said about 2008, the difference in 2000 from 2008 to 10 in the same-gender marriage conversation. I would think what happened there is they saw several states offer civil rights, and it's almost like in the civil rights movement that all of those who had all of the charges against the movement, once it became law, they either changed or they put their prejudice underground.
It's always a really messy mix, right? And, you know, but one of the interesting things I remember reading is a pastor who wrote an op-ed, and she was in a state that where same-sex marriage was legal, and she was saying, "I'm now torn between a parishioner who has come and said to me, 'Can you do what is legal in our state, what our state has said is legal and okay to do, and what my denomination has said is not moral and okay to do?'" Mm-hmm. And she actually said, you know, in this case, in her op-ed, she said, you know, "My conscience tells me that the state is actually righter than my denomination is." Now, there's probably others who have the opposite sense, but this sense of push and pull between sort of states moving in a direction, and some denominations are also moving in that direction.
We've been talking with Dr. Robbie Jones. He's founder and CEO of the Public Religion Research Institute and the designer of the Values Survey. We put a link to the survey results up on our website. You can go to it, stateofbelief.com. Robbie, it's really always a privilege and learning experience to have you on State of Belief, and thank you for doing it again.
Oh, that's really generous. Well, thank you. I'm always happy to be here. Thanks.
By the way, to hear an extended version of my interview with Dr. Robbie Jones, please visit stateofbelief.com. You can hear everything we talked about there. Up next, the founder of the Metropolitan Community Church joins us on the occasion of the denomination's 42nd anniversary. We'll be talking with Reverend Troy Perry about the history of MCC and his vision for its future. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is State of Belief Radio. Welcome back to State of Belief, everybody. I'm Welton Gaddy. The Metropolitan Community Church, or MCC, as a lot of people refer to it, began at a gathering of 12 people who were interested in worshiping in a gay-affirming environment, not all of them gay, I might add, in suburban Los Angeles. It was October 6, 1968, and they were responding to an invitation from a young Pentecostal preacher who had been defrocked for his homosexuality. Now, if you do the math as we talk, you know this past week, that means they celebrated their 42nd anniversary as a church. And today, MCC has almost 300 congregations around the globe. It's the largest LGBT organization in the world. And I could not be more pleased that this anniversary brings the founder of Metropolitan Community Church to State of Belief, Reverend Troy Perry, a friend of many years. Troy, welcome.
Thank you so much, Weldon.
In your autobiography, you talk about the idea for this ministry coming to you after a suicide attempt. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, very quickly. I can tell you that I had fell in love for the first time in my life with a man. Mm-hmm. I was still very inexperienced in gay life. I was trying to turn my partner into the little lady in our relationship. And, of course, that doesn't work. No. And when he walked out of my life, I ended up just so despondent. I tried to go to church. I tried to talk to people. And everywhere I went, my lifestyle, I was told, was an abomination. Mm-hmm. And when this young man walked out of my life, I just said, okay, God, you can't love me. I can't love you. Don't bother me. I won't bother you. And I have nothing to live for. I can't talk to anybody. My parents don't understand. One night I was so depressed, I walked into a bathroom in our home where I lived at that time and cut both of my wrists, climbed into a bathtub, and just hoped that I would die. Mm. And later, the person I was dating and my roommate, Willie Smith, came home, put tourniquets on my arms, rushed me to County General Hospital here in Los Angeles. And I sometimes witness to people, it was there, that that still small voice in the mind's ear let me know after prayer that I had that feeling that we folks from the South and from Pentecostal backgrounds sometimes talk about. I felt the joy of my salvation again for the first time in years. But something was still wrong. There was a woman there. She said, well, I don't know why you've done this, but there's somebody you can talk to. Can't you just look up? And she pushed every preacher button on me from my Pentecostal Southern Baptist background. Mm-hmm. And when she left, I prayed. And I felt that joy again. It's hard to explain. And I stopped and I said, wait a minute, God, this can't be you. The church had taught me you can't love me. And I tell people 42 years later that God spoke to me in that still small voice in the mind's ear and said, Troy, I love you. You're my son. I don't have stepsons and daughters. And I knew without a shadow of a doubt that I was a gay man, but I was a Christian, too. And it took me about 3 months later before it dawned on me, wait a minute, if God can love me, God can love other people like me.
And, Troy, then you had the idea of a gay church, and my guess is some people told you you were crazy.
It was very interesting. My thing was not a gay church so much, other than I wanted it absolutely to be an outreach into the GLBT community, mm-hmm. but open to everybody from the first day, as you said. Mm-hmm. We had heterosexual involved in service. Mm-hmm. And so for me, when I went home, I really wrestled, and then I finally decided to take an ad out. And I met the owners of the Advocate. They argued with me for an hour. Why should we sell you an ad? And nobody likes religion in our community. What are you trying to do here? And I just witnessed to them after an hour. They said, look, we'll give you the first ad if you'll pay for two more. I said, great, I'll do it that way. And I took out an ad. Here, Reverend Troy Perry, with a photograph of myself, gave my home address in Huntington Park, went home and told Willie Smith, my roommate, and he said, Troy, you are crazy. People tell me today, oh, you were so brave. I tell them, no, I was stupid. I didn't know at that time you weren't supposed to give people your home addresses or use your real name. Mm. But I did, and October the 6th, 1968, 12 people showed up. 9 friends and 3 strangers, one heterosexual couple, one Jew, one person of color. And it was just a view of things to come from Metropolitan Community Church.
You know, Troy, I think all of us know what your ministry to the GLBT community has been. You've given a home when they couldn't find a home in religion. But I have the sense that you also have had a ministry to mainline churches that exclude people because of their sexuality. Can you talk about that a second?
Absolutely. From the very first day, I knew. I sometimes said I was met with some GLBT leaders with a lot of suspicion. They had been hurt by religion, and I understood that. But I said to them, you know, where you like it or not, I said religion is important to people, including the GLBT community. And I said, I'm learning as I scratch even our national leadership that under it is sometimes former Roman Catholic nuns. I could go name and names, but I'm not right now, you know. Or people who had a deep spirituality, not necessarily religious, but a deep spirituality. And I knew right off the bat my first thing was going to be that I had to be a missionary. Mm-hmm. And that's an old word, I know, but a spokesperson to go in to meet leaders of other denominations. Mm-hmm. And the first person I ever talked to was Bishop Paul Moore, the Episcopal Church, when he was the Bishop of New York City. Mm-hmm. And I went to him to talk to him. And that was right after our church in Los Angeles had been arson and burned down to the ground. Since then, I've met with all kinds of people. I invited Dr. Jimmy Allen, the former president of the Southern Baptist Convention, to speak at our general conference.
Right.
Because of his involvement with AIDS, with his family, I was invited to the Carter Center by President Carter for one of the first meetings on AIDS in America with other religious leaders. So I invited him. I said, I think you have something to say. He said, well, you know, I disagree with you some. And I said, yes, I understand that, Dr. Allen, but I believe you still have a story. And we'd love to have you come and preach at General Conference. And he accepted my invitation.
I've heard that from his side and from your side. And I think it was a beautiful experience that you set in motion. Look ahead. What do you see for the Metropolitan Community Church in the next 42 years?
Well, I see us continuing to grow and to reach out into communities worldwide. There are countries that still execute homosexuals. There are still countries where they don't have the freedom that we do. We're still fighting for our own freedom here in this country. There are still kids murdering themselves, thinking nobody cares about them, and especially around religion. And it is our job to continue to push forward and to let people know without a shadow of a doubt they're loved by God.
We've been talking with Reverend Troy Perry, a real pioneer in American religion, founder of the Metropolitan Community Church. Troy, happy anniversary to you and your partner. Happy anniversary to the church. And thank you for joining us on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much, Walden.
Well, 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 well. Last Sunday, ABC Television broadcast a special edition of the program This Week with Christiane Amanpour. They called it a town hall meeting. Should Americans be afraid of Islam? Now, we don't have time to get into analyzing that title or everything that was said, but I do want you to listen to this. When Amanpour questioned Reverend Franklin Graham, son of preacher to Presidents Billy Graham and president of the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, about past statements calling Islam a religion of hatred and labeling it wicked and evil, here's how Graham responded.
First, Christiane, I understand what the Muslims want to do in America. They want to build as many mosques, cultural centers as they possibly can so they can convert as many Americans as they can to Islam. And I understand that.
Really, Reverend Graham? You fear Muslims want to build mosques here and cultural centers aimed at converting Americans to Islam? Does that mean people also should fear you and your evangelistic organization for seeking to convert Muslims to Christianity, whether or not they want to hear your message? Get our government to ban the building of mosques, and you will have a government that also can ban the building of churches. Did you think of that? How smart is that? And what about you sprinting toward tragedies in one place or another, not only to offer much-needed and much-appreciated help that no one can deny, but also opportunistically using the vulnerability of tragedy as an opportunity for proselytizing on behalf of Christianity? If we fear these people devoted to their religion, should we not fear you as well? Do you understand?
I understand what they're doing. And I just don't have the freedom to do this in most Muslim countries. We can't have a church. We're not able to build synagogues. It's forbidden. But let me just say something about Islam. I love the Muslim people, but I have great difficulty with the religion.
Reverend Graham, you really just don't get it, do you? You want not a golden rule, but the tarnished rule that says, if you don't do what I want you to do, I don't have to treat you kindly. Freedom is religion's best friend. Freedom for all religions in our land has been good both for religion and government. Look, I too would like to see devotion to freedom of religion spread around the globe, but I don't think the best strategy is one of threats and condemnation. I have no doubt that many Muslims are as fearful of your intent as you are of theirs. And as a Christian myself, Reverend Graham, I wish you would use the privilege of your global pulpit to exhibit the good news of faith rather than seeking to instill fear in all people of faith. Well, I wish we had more time, but we don't. It's all gone for this edition of State of Belief Radio. But you can visit us online at stateofbelief.com for more on the Public Religion Research Institute's American Values Survey, an extended version of my conversation with Dr. Robbie Jones, and to sign up for podcasts. You need to have a podcast if you don't get it already. That's at stateofbelief.com. By the way, our show has a new producer, an experienced radio person with whom I was privileged to work at Air America Radio. His name is Ray Kirstein. Let him hear from you via our website. Good things are ahead, so please tell a friend about our show. And if it's a good day, tell two friends if you like. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. If you want to get more involved in the cause for religious freedom, then join us. Join Interfaith Alliance. Become a member. Go to interfaithalliance.org to learn more. I can guarantee you we will be back here on State of Belief Radio next week with more stories from the intersection of religion and politics, interviews you'll enjoy, surprises, and who knows what else. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see what he was.